Out of the Bronx, New York, it's Latin jazz percussionist Bobby Matos and his Afro-Latin jazz ensemble with Miles Davis's All Blues. This is from his 2006 album, Gratitude. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. This is where we get together and share our thoughts and ideas and opinions about issues of the day, topics we've covered on the program, or whatever you think merits further discussion and debate. So talk what you walk and free your mind and perhaps other minds too. You call 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And all we're looking for is what you thinking? Okay. Let's start with E in Edgewater. You're starting us off today.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Good afternoon.
Well, I need your help today. I'm going to need some help because I'm not good with computers and websites and all these things, but I don't understand. How does Steve Zuckerberg make billions of dollars?
How what?
How does he make billions of dollars off this Facebook thing?
Well, you're asking the wrong person. If you think you don't understand it, I don't either. But here's the general gist of it. He has a product which he has marketed. And the product apparently appealed to billions of people around the world. And they pay one way or the other. Advertisers pay to reach people who use his product or service. And that's how he makes money.
So in other words, he doesn't really provide any product. He depends on people coming onto this site for him to make all this money. Am I correct in that?
No, because you would have to say that what he's providing is a product. It's also a service.
Okay. Well, I remember back in 2000, from 2004 maybe, there was a site called MySpace. Do you remember MySpace?
Sure.
Okay. Now, everybody was on MySpace. And my friend got a computer, and she was on MySpace, and she loved MySpace. It was like she got a Barbie doll. You know, she'd make a background and all this stuff, and she wanted to show me balloons and all these things. And I got on it, and it lasted for 2 days for me because I just didn't see any sense in it. But there was her cousin was going to college at the time, King College in New Jersey, and she was on something called Facebook. And it was geared more to college students so they could exchange ideas and change books and do everything online that it would be hard for them to do, you know, running back and forth, so they could do everything online. And then it caught on, and everybody got rid of MySpace, and they all got on Facebook. Am I correct in this?
Well, I don't know. I never followed the progression of and development of these things. I really haven't. But what is the point that you're making?
Because the point I'm making is because I was privy to having these two people, one was on MySpace, one was on Facebook, and then the one on MySpace joined into the Facebook after a while. And it no longer just became a college thing. It became a social media thing for the whole world. So my premise is instead of one man making billions of dollars, you create a site called We the People. And all the people that sign up for it and get off this Facebook thing, they get a check at the end of the year for all the money that's generated on the site. It would be called We the People. See, I don't know how to start something like that. And I know there's plenty of intelligent people out there that know how to do these things. And I'm wondering, why would it be so hard? Because Steve Zuckerberg basically copied
MySpace. Because this is not how the way businesses are formed. This is not the way businesses get off the ground with just somebody having an idea. You have to have financing. You have to know how to market your service. You have to be competitive. So we have people with zillions of ideas that go nowhere because they think it's just having an idea. That's not the way things work. Your idea has to be backed up with a serious commitment to financing your idea and marketing it and entering into the marketplace and taking the chance that you could be crunched by the opposition, by your competitors. So we have to go beyond just having the idea. Backing is really, in this day and age, it is practically impossible to implement.
Well, it seemed pretty easy for Steve Zuckerberg to do it. Like I said, he just started a website that was...
No, he didn't just start a website. He was in college and literally devoted his life as a student to this and putting this together. He didn't just start yesterday.
Okay, but there's many people out there that are just as smart as him, that aren't as greedy as him, and they would like to share the wealth of whatever this website could create with all the people that go that subscribe to it, because they're
might be convinced that they can put up a good site. Nothing is preventing them from doing it. If they think they have a product or a service that can take on Facebook and even beat Facebook, power to them. But so far, we haven't seen it. Okay, you got us started today. Mitch from New York, you're on the air.
Patrice, this is a health issue that's concerning me. I read where breast cancer in women is going to increase by 50% by the year 2000.
Says who?
This is a report that was put out by the government. And my thought is, if you know this is going to happen, then why aren't we taking steps to educate the people and intervene on this thing? Because this is serious. This report was put out by the National Cancer Institute.
When? Yeah.
Well, it doesn't have the date on it right here. April the 20th.
Well, that's a fairly recent report.
Yes, yes. And this is, to me, I know quite a few women that have that has breast cancer, you know, and, you know, it's not really nobody's sounding the horn about it, you know, that we have these statistics. How did you get the statistics? I mean, what data did you put together to get them? If you put the data together to get this, then there should be some way that you can educate the people so that this won't happen to them. And then you read about Johnson & Johnson with this this powder that people used to use.
Paper powder.
That has asbestos in it that could cause ovarian cancer.
Well, I don't know what the answer to your question is. You know, what can we do? We do what we can. That's the answer. We do what we can to get the word out. And we also bear in mind the fact that this government, no matter who the president is, it has not been very sympathetic to the notion that diseases have to, you can, in so many cases, head off disease with funding, proper funding for programs that are innovative, to encourage research, and most importantly, treatment. Breast cancer is one such example of it, but you have a full range of diseases that continue to claim lives unnecessarily because the treatment isn't there and there's no interest. Just yesterday, we talked about what is happening in Flint and in Detroit with toxic water. People coming down with all kinds of diseases, but there has been really no aggressive treatment for diagnosis, for diagnosis and treatment. This is an absolute sin in the United States, where diseases kind of are like they're franchised, and it has to do with funding from private sources and even from the government. And so they've fractionated out a lot of diseases. You know, so if breast cancer is affecting more powerful people, it would get more funding than, say, asthma. It's not sexy to say you have asthma. So it is a travesty. I don't understand how this is allowed to continue, but it does continue.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we can get somebody like Gary Noel to give us some insight on this, on one of his programs, you know, what's going on. Like I said, if they can put these statistics together, they had to know exactly what's going on and where this stuff is coming from. And why is it that you made this percentage-wise, 50%? That's a lot.
That's outrageous and very scary. But the United States, when it comes to health and health issues, it's like a mafia operation. People corner the market, you know, on various diseases because there's so much money in it.
Yeah.
And there's not been, I think, there has not been an adequate response by watchdog agencies to really blow the whistle on these kinds of things and get action, you know, taken against them.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. Mm. Thanks for calling in today. Jay, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon, Eutrice. Happy birthday. Happy belated birthday, and how are you?
I'm hanging in. Thanks.
Listen, I heard your show yesterday in regards to Detroit and Flint. You know, in all honesty, it is absolutely criminal what the United States have done to the people of Flint and, you know, what they've done to Detroit. But I think it's the most egregious in Flint because the water is still affecting the people today after all of these years. And, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind when I think about Flint is the sham that, you know, the so-called first black president, Obama, did by drinking the water or taking what one would say a sip of the water and to not do the necessary things to fix that problem. And even to the day, this clown that's in the office and the other politicians still haven't fixed the water. And to then look at what's going on in Puerto Rico, it's just absolutely egregious that we in this society act and behave in that type of fashion towards human beings. And most of them, you know, unfortunately, are people of color because we get stuck there. Now, let's not forget there are numerous white people and other ethnic groups that have suffered also from this. But because of the wealth inequalities in this country, black people are stuck there and mostly white people are able to move somewhere to safety. And it just goes to show how we as a people are in such a bad position in this country and a damaged position in our country, and that our so-called politicians, our so-called leaders, are some of the worst individuals on the planet as people of color, because the things that Bobby Rush, the John Lewis's, the Barbara Lee's, and the rest of these individuals in the Black Caucus do to their own people would be seen, if we really looked at it properly, as nothing more than treason. Because
you're talking, and I agree with you, but we are still in the realm of the hypothetical with regard to the political, what the political response has been. I'm asking you now, what is the solution?
To be honest with you, based on the way things are at this time and in this country, in all truthfulness, there really is no solution. As far as a solution from the government and from politicians, there's no solution because they won't do the right thing. Now, as far as the people go, that's a question that if we as a people were able to figure it out, we would not be in the conditions that we are in today.
But that's not necessarily true. We've had convoys leaving even as far north as Canada, bringing water during the height of this crisis. Convoys bringing water. And the irony is that these cities are literally at the shores of the largest source of fresh water, one of the largest in the world. I'm referring to Lake Michigan. So we can't simply bemoan a situation and not come up with a viable solution.
I keep asking all the time,
give solutions. Think about solutions. What could be done?
The solution would first have to start with figuring out how you can organize the people. That's one of the biggest problems in society is how do you organize the people and be able to sustain the organization? If we could do that, don't you think we would be able to solve the majority of the problems in this country? Yeah, for some reason we gather people at one time, like the convoy, and then we do a process, and then after we do the process, for some reason, it just breaks apart. That's the dilemma of our society. How do we sustain any movement?
Here's the thing. The people, these are churches organizing convoys as far north as Canada to bring in water. This is shameful in and of itself. We cannot avoid the question as to why the government and why government officials, especially in the Congressional Black Caucus, why haven't they responded accordingly? And why hasn't the community insisted that they respond? You see, I think it's time to stop the hand-wringing over problems that are quite solvable.
Yeah, but why hasn't everything that you're saying we agree with? Why hasn't it been able to do one thing, Utrice? Catch on. Why haven't people been able to implement all of the great teachings that you have given us in the example? There's something fundamentally wrong to be able that people don't grasp what you're saying and being able to implement. That's the $1,000 question that I don't even think you have a way of solving, because you've given us
my solution is going to sound very harsh, and I've said it a couple of times on the program. At some point, we'll have to cut people loose who are of no use to a revolution, if you will.
How to do cut that? That's the
by
question.
That, you just ignore them. We have all these major cities and towns across the United States where the political pressure should have been applied, even though this is in Michigan. Well, you have a pretty sizable contingent in New York City. You have a sizable contingent in Georgia. You have all kinds of ways in which networking could be done to force a solution here, but they're not doing it. They're concerned about getting elected and staying in office, and then we let them get away with it. This is us. This is nobody else's fault. This is us.
I agree with you. I'm just trying to figure out, how do we hold ourselves accountable? How do we move forward to galvanize the type of response that you're talking about, and then do the most important thing, sustain it? If we could figure those things out and we could implement it and do it, then we could solve so many problems. But
yeah, but we don't have
reason,
the time.
I don't think it's happening.
We don't have the time to do all of that. This is at such a critical point now that you're either on board with your helping hands or you're not. And we can't wait to figure out why people are not catching on, why they're not involved, why they're not part of the solution. I'm done with that. I'm interested in, if you have 10 people who are solid, I'll take them. And ignore the rest, the million who are not. Because the million who are not will not help us in any way. They become additional baggage that you have to carry. So you work with the people who are willing to work. That was the point of talking to Abayomi Ezekiwe yesterday. He and many others, they clearly are not enough, but there are people who have put their hands, to the plow. They're working. And we just have to work with what we've got. It is sickening to me that African Americans in particular, who say they have an understanding of their history and they talk about all these leaders and they admire and whatever it is, but haven't done a damn thing to contribute to the welfare and well-being of their own communities. I have no use for those people. I ignore them. I make it a point, ignore them, because they are useless to our collective progress. And I don't want to waste another breath wondering why they're not involved. I don't care.
Well, I'll just leave it with this. We have to figure out a way to move forward. We have to hold these people accountable for the misdeeds that they're doing.
We've heard this time and again.
We're going to be in the same situation. It's not going to change.
So it's useless talking about people who are useless. And talk instead about people who are doing something. I'm interested in talking about people who are
I'll give you this credit. I will give you this credit. You do bring forward people from the community that do tell us what's going on, because the brother yesterday, he was extremely informative in regards to the situation, because I could honestly say, I know there's a crisis. I understand that there's a crisis, but I didn't know that the crisis was still on the level that it was. And to be honest with you, the crisis is probably far worse than we even imagined. And I'm just going based on seeing little things on Facebook and Twitter about the people that are not even totally mentioned, the children that are suffering from lead poisoning that will affect them for the rest of their lives. You know what I mean? So, you know, I just hope that we could figure out how to address that issue. You know, I try to make a little
donation. It's so easy, in my view.
Nature.
It is so easy to figure that out.
Well,
it is so easy to figure that out. You find out what you can do. You call them up and say, look, I could send you a check for $25 a month. If that's what you can do, then do that. But we do not have the luxury of sitting around trying to figure out what can be done. We know what could be done. We just won't do it. So I'm not giving anybody a pass. If you know a problem and it hits you that this is outrageous, then the next step is, what can I do to help? That's it. And don't wait for anybody else. Your $25 check would buy water. And we're talking the United States in 2018 and people not having water. My God. And we're still trying to figure out what to do. Send a check to whatever organization is working and figure a way to contribute so that people have water. They're senior citizens who are literally dying in their homes. When you are serving Black people water that even the automobile industry won't use because it corrodes the engines of their cars, and this has been going on for years. And we have people who are in Congress. One of the senior most members of Congress just, of course, quit because of a sexual issue, John Conyers. But for all the years that he's been there, Maxine Waters. You have all these people who flap their lips all the time and point fingers. The last thing you can say is you could read a list of people who are on board. This is not just a crisis. I hope people understand this is genocide. The plan clearly is to get rid of Black people in the state of Michigan by all kinds of means. We had Reverend Pinckney talking about how they just one company, they allowed Whirlpool to just take over the whole town. They convicted this man. And the prosecutor said, we have no charges or evidence against him, but that should not bar you, members of the jury, from coming back with a guilty verdict. Oh, we are so out of touch with each other on fundamental levels. We are so out of touch. So I appreciate your questions, but I'm saying we have to come to a point, Jay, when we no longer spend so much time asking these questions. We've been asking them for umpteen years. It is more important now and more urgent now to do something. Thanks for your call. We have Jeff from New Jersey. You're on the air.
Well, it's been a hot one today, huh?
I'm trying to contrast the weather we're having, which is more and more rain. I expect an arc to be built in the neighborhood anytime now.
All right. Well, we're doing all right up here. We dried out and warmed up a little. But I share your sentiment because the NAACP in South Carolina and Georgia. And somebody please get them this message. Stop sitting in at the Waffle House so that they treat you right so that you can give them your money. Somebody call Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles out in California. Ask them for a franchise and build it across the street from the Waffle House. And stop spending your money in places where they don't want you. They don't want your business. Okay? You can do that by collectively getting the churches around there to pool some money to create a corporation that will put up Waffle Houses throughout the South that black people own, that black people can work in, and that black people can be served in without an issue. Now, you know, the thing with these guys and the this whole thing, this whole week has just been insane, okay, because just the information that I'm getting and looking at with the guys with the they said that the guys in Starbucks settled for a dollar from the city and $200 fine. But I will tell you that I think that that thing happened so fast that it looked like a setup to me, that it was a lead into his announcing that he was going to maybe pursue a public life. That to me just looked like a setup. It didn't look quite real. But the gentleman, and speaking to the gentleman, and you have to understand about Michigan. Michigan and those Illinois and those places up there sit on lakes. Lakes that you can probably draw water from, filter, and have fresh water. One of the reasons why I believe they're running the people out of Michigan is so they can control the water. Because that water can be canaled.
Yeah, I remarked that they're sitting on one of the largest resources of fresh water is Lake Michigan.
Yeah, so now people should understand that. And, you know, I don't understand how you live in Chicago, you play basketball in Chicago, you play football in Chicago, you play football in Detroit, and you have millions of dollars and you walk past these places. But, you know, actually, I can't understand it, because your advisors usually are not people who are going to invest in that community. They want you to invest in other things and other little schemes that will get you broke at the end of the day. But I spoke about going back into the churches, and I say that because in Puerto Rico, you can use the churches as schools. You can use them as distribution centers. It's the same thing we can do in the black community, because they're getting ready to get some tough times. Like I said, we don't have time. We got to do something now. So we should make the focus of our community back into the churches, just join. And it's not maybe not for religious reasons, but for community reasons. You know, and the brother from New York, if you want to do something, grab a young man. Grab a group of young men, all right, and you guide them through. You let them know about the system. They may not catch on right away, but they will start to see it for themselves. At least they will be forewarned. Everybody within the sound of the voice, of my voice, listen, you got to stay with the youth. That's how we sustain it. Those are going to be the legs that we use. But we, the older people, need to guide. You know, I was listening to a broadcast yesterday about the Poor People's Movement. And one of the gentlemen said, I was with Dr. King and the Poor People's Movement in Washington, D.C. He said, but it seems like these people leading the Poor People's Movement have not talked to poor people. They look like they're afraid to go in the neighborhoods and talk to poor people. So we have to be very conscious of who we're lending our power behind, who we're lending our movements to, whose movements we're joining, because it's to serve themselves. You know, it's not to serve us. It's to serve themselves. If they're not talking to the poor people, they're not going into these communities, they're not there to serve you. They're there to get themselves a little bit on the resume, say they were politically active. When they get ready to run for office, this is a little badge they're going to hang on it, because nothing's going to get done. I heard the ladies in the speech at the Poor People's Movement. We want a ban on assault rifles. What's that got to do with poor people? Poor people are not getting killed by assault rifles. They're getting killed by handguns. You know, it has nothing to do with your schools. Your schools are run down. They're closing. They're stealing money from you. And you're worried about assault rifles that have nothing to do with you? That tells me that that campaign is not genuine. All right? At least that section of the campaign is not genuine. Or that person speaking is not genuine. But we have far more greater issues that we're going to have to turn into. And we can't do it alone. And I know, listen, you said 10 people. 10 people are usually what runs an organization. Everybody else needs to show up for support. That's it. Show up for support, give some money, come here, spend your money, so we can do what we need to do.
Well,
that's the end of my rant.
I think
we probably run out of time.
If you touch people a bit, I think you would find that there is great concern. They just have been immobilized. It's a comfort level now to be uninvolved. And Indeed. You just have to wake people up. You can't be uninvolved. Things are happening, and they're not for our benefit. Thanks a lot for your call. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. Hello. How are you doing? Wonderful, Utrice.
I'm doing okay. How's by you?
Pretty good. Well, I'd like to talk about water. It's the key issue here. I'd like to talk about preserving our freshwater resources. And it turns out that fossil fuel like coal, oil, methane, and nuclear power plants are second only to agriculture in their daily use of America's freshwater resources. They use basically these coal-fired, methane, and oil-fired plants. They boil water, and they use that steam to power the generators. And nuclear plants, they have these giant water cooling towers where they emit all this water into the air to cool the nuclear plants. And they really are, it's really taken up an incredible amount, plus fracking for oil and natural gas poisons our freshwater aquifers. So they're one of the main culprits. And at the same time, the CO2 released into the atmosphere causes severe drought, like here in California, we're in severe drought. So I would say the fossil fuels are the prime culprits here. And we have to move on to renewable energy. Now, the thing about solar panels, for instance, that once they're manufactured and installed on the rooftop, they use no water over their 20 to 25-year warranty to generate clean, renewable electricity. And I even feel that people should receive what I call a solar water credit for the water they didn't use while generating electricity. And also, if we buy electric cars and plug them into our solar electric rooftops, they use a lot of water too in the refining of oil, oil refining plants. So that would save a tremendous amount of water as well. So the key to preserving our freshwater resources is to move to a renewable energy environment. And it turns out also, if you Google the words atmospheric water harvesting, atmospheric water harvesting, there's companies, it turns out that because the fossil fuels create so much heat in the atmosphere, there's a tremendous amount of water vapor that comes off the oceans, lakes, and rivers, and there's more and more water building up in our atmosphere. And this extensive amount of excessive water vapor causes bigger hurricanes and tornadoes and storms. And so we have to, in a sense, reduce the heating of the atmosphere to reduce the amount of water vapor. And the atmosphere is like oceans of water. There's a tremendous amount of water, unbelievable amount of water there. So there's these companies now called atmospheric water harvesting companies, if you can look them up on Google, that pull water out of the air. And they filter it and cool it, and you can drink it. So it would be a new resource for fresh, renewable water, and you can have atmospheric water harvesting coolers at the office or in the home, powered by your solar electric rooftop. So that's one of the keys, the new keys to getting clean, renewable water is to pull it out of the atmosphere and help actually reduce the amount of water vapor in the atmosphere. So those are some of the key things. But the thing is that our continuous use of fossil fuels is actually one of the main reasons that we're running out of water in America and the world.
Harvey, you always deliver something profound for us to consider, and I thank you very much for it. Thank you for calling in today.
My pleasure.
David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice.
Hello.
Nice to hear you every day. When you had the discussion about breast cancer, that rang a bell with me, because there's a book that's called Dressed to Kill, and one of the things about this book is that it deals with breast cancer. And also the so-called bar or brazier. And in the book, an anthropologist was in an area with indigenous people somewhere in Southeast Asia. And this is an American anthropologist, and she used to wear brassieres, and she washed one and hung it up. And next thing you know, she had women coming around and asking her, what was that? You see? And what I'm saying is that the so-called brassiere that women wear in certain countries, especially Western European countries and the United States, is a fashion item. It's not a necessary item. And as we know, breasts are supposed to move around and not be restricted. So they're not supposed to be restricted. And if you look at the statistics in the past, I've looked at that, of countries around the world, the most breast cancer would be in these countries like the United States and Western Europe. In the countries where women don't even know what a brassiere is and never wore one, you know, their rate of breast cancer is much less. But this brings us to how medicine is practiced in this country. The domination or the dictatorship of the MD physicians. They talk about all the time about early detection of cancer. That's the mantra, early detection of cancer, when they should be talking about how to prevent cancer. Now, that's the thing, but you never hear about that because there's no money being made in prevention. The money is being made by so-called treatment, and there is why you don't hear anything about it. You don't hear about the dangers of wearing tight brassieres, the dangers of wearing them too long, and all these things are never, ever mentioned here. So women need to look into that, do the research, and think about prevention of something like breast cancer by getting away from garments that are dangerous for the body, and especially the breasts. Okay. Now,
it's a very good suggestion, I'll tell you, because when you look at the history of brassieres and you go, by God, these look like torture implements.
Yeah.
And no wonder women were in many ways so grouchy, because there's no way you could have an even temperament wearing some of these.
That's right. It's not a necessary item. It's a fashion item. And it is just as bad as a man wearing underwear that is tight around his testicle area. Testicles are outside the body, and they're supposed to hang loose. Now, you're not supposed to bind up your testicles. So, you know, people need to think about this. This is a very important thing for, you know, good health. The other thing I want to talk about is this. You see, even though since the Civil Rights Movement, you've had a proliferation of people of color getting elected to elected office and whatnot, and being, you know, senators and congressmen and various assembly people in the state or city or whatnot, things have not changed. The condition and the wealth of people of color, I don't think, has improved that much. So as I see it, a lot of these people are just getting in to party the action. They're down with the status quo. So even though you got a black face or brown face in there, they're just down with the regular status quo. They're just getting a piece of the action. So one of the things that I would do is get to the point of getting out of these two groups of the one uniparty that you have. You know, I could never sign up for Republican or Democrat or anything like that. Get out. We need to get away from these people and start thinking about doing something that is different. You can't just say, you can't fight City Hall and can't do anything about it and join in with it, because it doesn't change anything. So that's one of the things. We talked about what things to do. I would say send your resignation in for these different parties and get out of them. I mean, just get out of them, and that's it. So to me, that's a very important move to make, and it's time to get into something else that will get some action. So that's a suggestion that I would make in addition.
It's an excellent suggestion. As you know, I have championed that very thing. Get out of these parties. They're not doing very much. Make stringent demands, even on third parties, as they're called, and to demand. I mean, what is the Green Party's response to the horrific things that are happening in Michigan?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? We have to we have to embolden those things that could work, and we have to encourage them to work by supporting them as well. Thanks so much for your call. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, I have some medical conditions that I'm dealing with, but I'm still hanging in there.
Good. So, you and me both. Thank you for your call today. Leona from Michigan, you're on the air.
Greetings, Eutrice.
Thank you.
Yes. You know, I listened to the show yesterday and all this week, actually, and you know, the thing that's going down in Flint with the water, I said early on, for whatever it's worth, yes, it qualifies as genocide. You know, I remember reading about the, you know, the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. It was, you know, General Assembly, United Nations, 1951, the stuff they agreed to. I apologize for the noise in the background there. And in Article 2, it just says the following. I'll be brief. Article 2 of that convention, it says, in the present convention, genocide means any of the following acts committed with the intent to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group as such. A, killing members of the group. B, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. D, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. And E, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. And Article 3 talks about the acts that are punishable. It's five of them. Genocide is punishable. Conspiracy to commit genocide is punishable. Direct and public incitement to commit genocide. Attempt to commit genocide. Complicity in genocide. Now, I don't know. I was trying. Do you know offhand whether or not the United States has signed on to this convention? I did a little digging in the past. I can't remember what the results were. There was some flack about the United States even agreeing to be a part of this particular convention. And some of that stemmed from back in 1951 when Paul Robeson, William Patterson, and a bunch of other folks took that petition to the United Nations charging genocide against Negroes or the descendants of Africans in this country back in 1951. So my question is, do you know offhand, does United States...
The United States did not, as I recall, the United States did not sign on to the articles of the conventions on genocide.
Okay.
For the specific reason that they would have to admit genocidal acts against the First Nations people, which okay. they're not prepared to do, and, of course, in slavery, which they're not...
Hello?
In any way.
Oh.
Are you listening?
Yeah, I'm listening. I couldn't hear you. The phone went blank for a moment. I apologize. Go on.
Oh. I'm saying the United Nations, to my knowledge, did not sign on to conventions on genocide because it would have had to admit its actions against the people of the First Nations here in the United States as genocidal, which they were not prepared to do, and slavery. They would not admit that there were genocidal, it was a genocidal program.
Okay.
So they did not sign on to the Articles of Genocide.
Okay. All right. I see.
But your point is, though, you're living in Michigan.
Yes, ma'am.
It strikes you as genocidal, what is going on?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, it does. And I'm not exactly sure what to do about it. I've made, you know, monetary donations. You know, I've volunteered to help out here and there. You know, I do a fair amount of video documentation and helping build historical record around certain things. And truth is, when I realize the truth is, when I find the courage inside, I guess where I'm ready to die, I think that's when I'm going to act on another level, because this is a life and death situation, and I think that's what it's going to take. I got to be ready to give up my own life, and maybe I've been a coward for all these decades that I've been alive, but I think that's what it's going to take. Because this is murder, this is genocide, this is war.
Why do you feel so intensely about it when so many others are just accepting, well, it's just another problem that we have to deal with. It's just another problem in the scheme of things. You are quite intense about this. What is it that you know that other people don't seem to know?
I don't know the answer to that, Eutrice. I don't know what it is that I know that other, but I know I have to hold my own self accountable. I don't know. I get so effing mad, though, sometimes, so angry about certain things, and some people shun me, I guess. I don't know the answer to it, but
is it that you feel so small in comparison to the largeness of the problem? You feel unable to even tackle a small piece of it because everything is just so critical at this moment? You feel outdone even before you start?
Yeah, I guess some of that's going on. It's overwhelming. You know, it's overwhelming. And it's getting to the point where it's the choices are very clear in a way, you know. In a way that, you know, it's getting more and more clear, you know. I've heard this quote by Dr. King, you know, if a man doesn't have anything worth dying for, they're not, you know, worthy of living. I'm paraphrasing. I don't know if the brother actually said that, but it's been reported that he said it. But I don't know.
Well, I will give you a few words of comfort. You regularly send your recorded history of what's going on, and I look at them. I mean, I know you're not a Hollywood producer, and you don't have an unlimited budget, but you are investing in doing the work of cataloging what is going on, and that is a great, great service.
Well, thank you.
There could be no denial of what the people's concerns are when you watch your videotapes that you make. And so I would encourage you to continue that, because that is a great service.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, we're at the end of our program. Up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. Have yourselves a great weekend. We'll reconnect on Sunday. Bye.